Sanskrit Yamnaram's Chavanarotamam, Devim Sarasutim Dasam, Adavande Chamadye Chahari Sabatagiyate Mukam Karodi Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yet Kripa Tamaham Vande Shigurum Dinataranam Paramananda Madhavam Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Granthadashamad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 1, Text 1. This verse is also quoted by Jiva Goswami in Pratisandarbha, the 76th section. Priyabrata Bhagavata Atmarama Katam Mune Grihe Ramate Anmula Karma Bhanda Parabhavaha. So this is Maharaj Parikshit asking Sukadeva Goswami this question. O great sage, why did King Priyavrata, who is a great self-realized devotee of the Lord, remain in household life, which is a root cause of bondage of karma and which defeats the mission of human life? In text 4, few verses later, he says, Sangsayo yan mahan brahman dharaghara sutadishu saktasya yat siddhir abut krishne cha mati achyuta. O great Brahman, this is my great doubt. How was it possible for a person like King Priyabrata, who is so attached to wife, children, and home, to achieve the topmost infallible perfection in Krishna consciousness? Gurave Gurachandraya Radhikaya Tadalaye Krishnaya Krishna Bhaktaya Tad Bhaktaya Namo Namaha. I wanted to speak something on this topic. We've been speaking about Vrindavan every day since we've been here. And that's really what we like to speak about. But I also felt it important to say something on a more philosophical basic level, I guess you can say, about Vanashram Dharma, although I don't like that word always, at least the way it's used quite often today, about Grihastha Ashram. I remember a few years ago, we were in Odessa in Ukraine. We were giving a class and we were speaking about how devotees should love each other. And one of the brahmacharis who was there, Ukrainian brahmacharis are they're fanatics. He got very disturbed and he said, what is this? There's no such thing as love except for Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada says that in a number of places. If you may read in Science of Self-Realization, Prabhupada wrote some letter to one lady. And he said something like, you speak in your letter several times about love, but you should know there's no such thing as love in this material world. And we hear that quite often. And I think that oftentimes as devotees, it used to be a very open thing, a very openly spoken thing, that the best is a sannyasis. If you can't be a sannyasi, then you should be a brahmachari. If you can't be a brahmachari, then probably better you just kill yourself. But if you have to live, then okay, you can get married, but then you should live in the temple. And then you're acceptable. But if you move outside of the temple, then you're like the scum of the earth. And what to speak if you have a job. If you're working full-time as a devotee, that's acceptable. But if you have a job, then we don't even want to look at you. You're some undesirable, less than creature. And what to speak if you have a child, and that's even worse. And what to speak if you have more than one child, then you're like really low class. And we're not even speaking about ladies. They're in another lower category yet. And now, after some years in our movement, we're starting to look around and there's not very many brahmacharis. And there's even fewer sannyasis. And there's very few grihasthas who are living in the temple. And most of us have jobs. Most of us are living outside. Most of us have children. And maybe it's time we begin to reassess things a little bit. Srila Prabhupada gave great stress sometimes on brahmachari life because they were good soldiers. He told Drishtadyumna Swami once, there had been one ISKCON sannyasi who fell down, had some problem. And Drishtadyumna Maharaj was speaking to Prabhupada about it, and Prabhupada said, actually, none of you are qualified for sannyas. He said, it's just like in wartime. There's no one qualified to lead the army, so you make everyone stand in line, and you count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you, 5, you, 5, and every fifth person you make him a lieutenant. That's what he told him. He says, we're doing this because we're at war and we need this. Now our times have changed. And we should understand something deeply about Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Although we oftentimes put more stress on brahmachari life or something, it causes pain to my heart because we have four ashrams. And as Srila Prabhupada described in one lecture in Delhi, brahmachari ashram, grihastha ashram, vanaprastha ashram, sannyas ashram. Each place is an ashram. It's a place where you practice ashraya, where you take shelter. We have a building, we have a brahmachari ashram building, maybe we have a grihastha ashram building. But more than just a building, especially for the grihastha, it means a wife, it means children, it means some economic program. That's a grihastha ashram. And just as we need a place to a building, an ashram to stay so the weather doesn't disturb us so that we can do our bhajan. So our ashram is also a place where we can get shelter so we can do our bhajan. The ashram, the purpose of it is for our bhajan, it's for our service. And grihastha ashram in particular has a bad name, even since the time of Maharaj Parikshit, you can see. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in Sartadarshan, he comments that Maharaj Parikshit, he was a king. He had a lot of wives. He was used to a certain standard of living. And he couldn't understand, how is it Maharaj Priyavrata can be a devotee? Is it possible? Can someone actually be a Hare Krishna devotee, be a devotee of the Lord, and be a grihastha? He was actually asking that question. It's a question which we asked later on in our movement. And today things have evolved somewhat. But we need to go deeper into the tradition of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. We were speaking the other day. It's a long subject. I don't know if I should get into that. Bhaktivinoda speaks about 8 different reasons why we offer respect, beginning with Sabyatara Maryada. I'll just go through them very quickly. Naramatara Maryada. Anyone is a human being, you respect them. More than that, Sabyatara Maryada. Anyone is a civilized person, we give more respect. More respect than that, Raja Maryada. Someone who's a king. More respect than that, Vidya Maryada. Someone who's learned, a professor is someone. We give respect by their knowledge. But more than that, Sadguna Maryada. Someone who has good qualities. He may be a rickshawala. And he may not have any education, but if he has good qualities, he's more respectable than a college professor who's smoking and drinking and whatever. And more than that, we give respect to Varna Maryada. It means especially the 4 Varnas, anyone who's acting according to Varna, and especially to the Brahmins. And more than that, we give respect to Ashram Maryada. Very few people act according to an ashram. And most of us here probably haven't lived in a brahmachari ashram before. And we need to have some ashram training. Someone who has an ashram, we give them more respect. And the most respect we give to the sannyasis. But the 8th and most important type of respect is bhakti maryada. And it doesn't matter what gender they are, it doesn't matter what age they are, we should give them respect. Mm-hmm. In Sajjana Toshini, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura writes, renunciate Vaishnavas should not think that they are more respectable than the grihastha Vaishnavas. One should know that the difference in respect among the Vaishnavas lies only between Uttama Adhikari and Madhyama Adhikari. He's not even speaking about gender. Mm-hmm. It means that we will give more respect to an Uttama Adhikari Mataji than we would to a Madhyama Adhikari Sannyasi. There's a purport of this. Although we have some social respect, which we give to the sannyasis and the brahmacharis, it's important, and Prabhupada disciples. But of all the different types of respect, the most important type of respect is due because for bhakti. He says, both Uttama Adhikaris and Madhyama Adhikaris are found amongst the Grihasthas. This also applies to the renunciate Vaishnavas. The glories of the renunciate Vaishnavas are that they've given up the association of women, greed for money and bodily pleasure. The Grihastha Vaishnavas also have special glories. Most of them work hard to earn money. This is the first thing Prabhupada said. This is a glory of the Grihastha Vaishnava. This is one reason why we should respect them. According to our Acharya, Srila Thakur Bhaktivinoda, someone who is a Grihastha Vaishnava is working hard to make money. We should give respect to that. We don't do that enough. That's an important thing. If someone can be a devotee in spite of that situation, we've often commented, people become grihasthas not generally because they're looking for prem bhakti, but often for some other reasons which we don't consider to be as high. But still, to go through the difficulties in the grihastha ashram, it's much, much harder to do your bhajan than it is for a sannyasi, very honestly. And that bhajan, in that sense, may be more valuable. We always respect the sannyasis, but we should also respect the grihasthas because they're working hard to make money, Bhaktivinoda says. They work hard to make money. And after serving Krishna, they serve the grihastha and sannyasi Vaishnavas. That's their glory. Whether one is a grihastha or a sannyasi, the principal cause for respect is the attainment of devotional service, of bhakti. One should be respected as a Vaishnav according to one's advancement in bhakti. There's no other cause to distinguish the level of a Vaishnav. When we speak about Grihastha Ashram, it's very difficult not to say something about women, because that's at least 50% of the quotient. And they're actually the more important part of the two. They care for the babies and things. We did some research on this subject, and we all know that in Western culture, women are worshipped. You see deities of them everywhere. You see pictures of them everywhere, movies about them. Everyone worships women in Western culture. In Indian culture, women are also worshipped. Women are worshipable. In Indian culture, they're worshipped as devis. And the tradition is, and still today in many villages in India, the husbands, they'll call their wife Devi, goddess. And in the West, we also have goddesses. When they're 13, 14, 15 years old, we were mentioning the other day in class, I think some of you were there, then I'm a goddess, and all the boys are running after me, and it's a nice thing, good life, to be a goddess. But unfortunately, it's also a very short-lived thing. And the respect that's there is not real respect, it's just a type of exploitation. It's very shallow, and it's not satisfying for women. Many times I find in our society, I find it rather hypocritical. I'm speaking to the men at this point. The ladies can just sit aside. I see a lot of times the men, they complain about the women. They say the women, they should be more chaste, or they should be like this or like that. They should be more traditional. When I hear a man say that, I find that very hypocritical. Excuse me for saying that. Because if you want to speak about tradition, tradition means that you're Shaktiman. You're the possessor of Shakti. And women, by nature, they follow men. It's not always a palatable thing to say to what modern ladies in culture today, but it's a fact. Women want to please men. They want to have boyfriends. They want to be loved. They want to be appreciated by men. And they'll follow a man. So if a man is strong and he has good principles, then the ladies will automatically follow that. And if someone is complaining why the women are not traditional, why don't you be traditional? Why don't you be strong? And then the women will naturally follow you. But because the men are not strong today, this is the problem. The Bhagavatam describes such men as yoshik kritamageshucha, or dancing dogs in the hands of women. They're just trying to please women in so many different ways. So they're also worshiping women, but their worship of women is an exploitive worship, just for their own sensual pleasure, and there's inherent violence in it. And it's not satisfying. It's very, very depressing, both for the man and for the woman. And especially when the woman, as we said a few days ago, she has a few too many pizzas and something, and she becomes a little broad. And then because we have a garbage culture, then we throw everything away after a few years and get a new model. So I get a new model wife. I throw the old one away and I get one that's a little thinner and prettier and younger, whatever, like that. And this is the kind of culture that we're trying to raise children in. And what kind of values do they have then? And how do the women feel? In every culture of the world, traditionally they understand this principle of prakriti purush, yin and yang, shakti shaktiman, male and female. And there has to be a balance. It's just nature's law. There should be 50-50 of each. And if there's a proper balance, then society runs in a good way. But when one side is imbalanced, then it doesn't work properly. So in that yin and yang, that prakriti purush, shakti shaktiman relationship, each one of them has a certain role naturally. Now, not everybody always follows that. Kunti Devi was a queen. There were queens in India who were sometimes fighting in battles with swords and things. But traditionally, ladies generally have a more nourishing relationship. In Vedic culture, that wasn't forced on them. It was encouraged. And ladies were found, they found themselves to be more satisfied in that way. And men like to be in charge of things. They have their false ego in that way. And they get more satisfaction in that way. But the women are actually the shakti behind the man. The man needs someone to say, that was really good, you did really good, you're really awesome. And every good wife does that. You do that with Chaitanya Prabhu? He needs that sometimes, yes. They need encouragement. And that's where men, we get our strength. She does that for me. So in Vedic culture, women are also worshipped, but they're worshipped as mothers. And there's a kind of love there. But that love is a different kind of love than seeing them as sex goddesses. And a sex goddess, how long can you be a sex goddess? Till you're 50 years old? 60? 70 years old? How old is Brigitte Bardot now? Does anybody know? Maybe she's 70 or 80 years old or something. Her face is beginning to look like a prune. And she doesn't want to give interviews anymore. Nobody cares for her anymore. She was worshipped. Mick Jagger, she was a girlfriend of Mick Jagger and so many different people when she was young. She's considered the most beautiful girl in the world. But now she doesn't want to show her face. And who cares for her now? Very, very few people. It's a very sad thing. But in Vedic culture, the tradition is, and we're not living in Vedic culture, and I'm not suggesting that we artificially try to change to that, but we should understand the values of it. And if we find something valuable that we can use, we should adopt it. In Vedic culture to this day, I've seen in the villages in Orissa and West Bengal, you can go up to a six-year-old girl and say, excuse me, Mataji. And she'll say, yes. She likes it. It's very nice because the phrase Mataji is a worshipable expression. In ISKCON, we use these two words, Mataji and Prabhu, as gender-based things. Prabhus means all the men, and Matajis means all the ladies, and the Prabhus are over here, and the Matajis, you get over there. And a lot of times, Mataji is almost like a slur or a bad word. It's like a second-class devotee. And Prabhu, which actually means something very worshipable, we think is a much higher thing. But actually, the culture in India is that Mataji is a topmost phrase. I'll give you a few examples. In the Brahmavivarta Purana, 1st Canto, Chapter 10, Text 50, Mataritjeva sabdena yamcha sambhasate naraha samatrituya satyena dharma sakshi satamapi. If a man addresses someone as mother, you address him as Mataji, then dharma, which also means Yamaraj, he witnesses that statement. And in truth, that lady becomes the same as your mother. You may know, I've seen so many cultures in this world, you may find the roughest, most degraded murderers, rapists living in prison. But they have one principle. If you say something bad about their mother, they'll kill you. Because mother is sacred to everybody in this world. Even the most low-class person in prison, generally speaking, with very, very few exceptions. In the Narada Pancharatra is a nice description. Ado samucharad radham paschat krishnam cha madhavam viparitam yadipatit brahma hatyam labedruvam. First we say the name Radha and then we say Madhav. We don't do it the other way around. If you do the reverse, then you get the result of killing a Brahmin. Brahmahatyam labed dhruvam. This is the Narada Pancharatra. Why? Shri Krishna jagatam dhato jagannata charadika pitu sadguno mata vandya puja gariyasi. Because Krishna is the father of the world and Radharani is the mother of the world. And the mother is 100 times more worshipable and higher in point of respect due than the father. This is Vedic culture. For those people who really want to be very traditional and very, very Vedic, you should worship Matajis. This is our tradition. In the Mahabharata, Anusasana Parva, chapter 105, text 15 to 16, Dasa chaiva patin mata sarvam va pativim api goravena bivavati nasti matri samo guruhu mata gariyasi yachcha tenaita manyate janaha. One's mother is equal to 10 fathers or even to the whole earth. There is no senior person equal to the mother. Indeed, she is above all others in terms of the reverence and respect due to her. It is for this reason that people offer so much respect to their mother. This is Vedic culture. This is such a wonderful culture. And yes, it's not that the men in Vedic culture didn't think their wife was beautiful. Of course they thought she was beautiful. Of course they were attracted to their wife, their girlfriend, or whatever. But this principle is there. A seeing woman is mother. Matrivat paradareshu. A wise person sees everyone as mother. Prabhupada says, except for one's wife. But if we think about it, a cultured person who gets married, he'll also see his wife in terms of mother. A cultured person. An uncultured person, when he sees a beautiful girl, he thinks, ooh, baby, she's like this, huh? And he tells her, I love you. He has a certain motivation, which we don't want to discuss in that relationship. I think we all understand. But a high-class person who wants to marry, he's looking for someone who will be a mother for his children. A lady who's going to be a good mother. Or someone who can help our Krishna Kund. She's a mother for many devotees. She doesn't have a child, but she's a mother for so many devotees. We need motherly persons in our society, in our life. And so immediately, a high-class person who looks for a wife, he's looking for someone to be like a mother. And so immediately there's respect there, because even the most low-class criminal respects his mother. Everyone respects their mother. So if you're marrying for this reason, and ladies should understand this, not just that we want to be persuaded as to be sex objects, but we should want to... A high-class man is going to appreciate a lady for being a mother. And then, again, when the wife has a child, then it's said that the father, he takes birth as that child. And then again, his wife becomes his mother. Sometimes we've commented, maybe a few of you heard me say this, Prabhupada many times said that women are like children. And they never really get more than like 8 years old. They're like simple. I don't know if that's true. Sometimes that's a little harsh, the way we use that comment. But I do know one thing that is true, is that if most ladies are like children, most men are also like children. And when they get married, they're just looking for a mother, someone who's going to wash their clothes and pick up after them and take care of them. And am I correct, Prabhuji? No. Mataji? Don't do that. But that's what they're all looking for. They all want a mother like that. They want someone like their mother. Just like girls who are very close to their father, and they're looking for a husband, they want someone who'll be like their dad in some ways, a noble person. So this is noble principles of marriage. We should understand the purpose of marriage. In the Smriti Shastra, it said, Samapta kama dharmaha aviruddha sapatnyam putraha patimatra hetuhu. The only purpose of sex life is to beget Krishna conscious children. Again, my Guru Maharaj quoted Smriti Shastra. Yata ritu swantatuyo bharayama sanido napagachati yo bharayam brunahatyayam pachate naraka sangsayati. If a husband refuses to go with his wife After she's completed her particular time of the month and she wants a child, then that man gets the sin of killing a child in the womb. If the wife wants a child and the husband won't give her a child, then he gets the result, the sinful reaction of killing a child in the womb. This is a purpose for marriage. Not everybody may be able to have a child, but we should try to have children. This is the purpose of Grihastha Ashram. The Bhagavatam describes, evam vyavaiha prajaya naryatra, that marriage is meant for procreating Krishna-conscious children, not for sexual enjoyment. In the Gita, Krishna says, dhamaviruddha bhuteshu kamosmi bharatarshiva, that I'm sex life, which is not contrary to religious principles. Not that sex life is not contrary to religious principles, but sex life done for Krishna is not contrary. So within our wedding ceremonies, we have the laja and aja homas. Those are the main principles of the marriage. In the laja homa oblation, we recite, edatam no hari bhaktihi swaha. May our devotion to Lord Hari flourish. This is the vows that we take at the time of Vaishnava marriage. That the purpose of this marriage is so that we can have bhakti. Om grinami te sabhagatvyam hastam maya patya jaradastihi yata asaha sanaka sanatana sananda sanat kumaraha mayam twadadu ghaya patyaya karshnaha. For good fortune, I take your hand. This is a panigrahanam ceremony when the husband takes the hand of the wife, which is another important part of the ceremony. For good fortune, I take your hand so that you may attain old age in the company of your husband. The four kumaras have given to you, you to me for performance of household duties as a devotee of Krishna. This is the purpose of Grihastha Ashram. It's described again and again and again. It's here. Many, many things of that. I don't want to go so many directions. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has written in one article in Sajjana Toshini, he just speaks about how Vaishnava marriage is not the same as Vedic marriage. This is very interesting. He says that in Vaishnava marriage, neither the husband nor the wife should claim the services of his or her partner on their own account. Both of them are only able to only to offer their services if and when their partner is pleased to permit them to share their service of Krishna. None of them can force their partners to serve them, because it's Vaishnava marriage. In a Vaishnava marriage, is it that your partner is less than you, is going to serve you? No, he's a Vaishnava. How can I? In Vrindavan, there's one story that I heard. True story. There was one marriage arranged. And the boy and the girl, as often takes place in India, they met for the first time at their marriage. And the ceremonies went on, and afterwards they were alone together in the room. And the boy was looking at his new wife, and he said, you know, I really think I've seen you somewhere before. I said, no, we've never met. No, you really look familiar. She said, well, once I was in a drama, and I was playing Srimati Radharani in the drama. Perhaps you saw, he said, that's it. You were playing Radharani. He said, you're my worshipable deity. And then he refused to touch her. And for the rest of their life, he was washing her clothes and cooking for her and serving her, because he saw her as Radharani. That's Vaishnava marriage. You should do like that. Your wife will be very happy. Maybe she wouldn't be so happy. But the principle is there. The principle is the principle of respect and mutual love based on devotion to Krishna. It's described in the Satvata Tantra. Harilila satochara parishu satatam tvaya karya pratistava harir yata bhakti lanashiti. We should learn to love devotees. We should love devotees because they're Krishna conscious. Because we hear Krishna conscious topics from them. Hari Lila Sutochara. We should love them because we're hearing Krishna Katha from them. We should love them because we're doing service together, because we're doing kirtan together. It's not, as our brahmachari friend was thinking in Odessa, that there's no such thing as love in this world. There is love. We just don't know what love is. Srila Prabhupada said there's no love in this material world, but in another lecture in Los Angeles, once Prabhupada said that we should learn to love the devotees. That's very important. And we'll love devotees in different ways. It's a kind of violence. Sometimes in our society, I'll just say it very strongly again, it's a kind of violence. When we tell grihastha devotees, there's no such thing as love, you can't love your wife, you can't love your husband, and we either say that grossly or we imply it subtly. What kind of ridiculous nonsense is that? Not only should you love your husband or love your wife, brahmacharis should love other brahmacharis. They should have a close bond of friendship. Sannyasis should have close bond of friendship, loving friendship with other sannyasis. We have to have love in this society. And what to speak of between husband and wife, we have to love our children. And sometimes our society has become so sick, just a fact, that we've thought it was Maya to love our children. It's a fact. During the time of Srila Prabhupada, many devotees, everyone was sending their children to the school in Dallas. And some of those children were 4 years old, 4 or 5 years old. And their parents were told it's Maya to think about them or contact them. And some of those children went for 2 or 3 years without seeing their parents. At that age, age of 4 or 5 years old, what does a child think? And some of those children, very sadly, were abused. Just like plants. If you want to protect a plant from disease and different weeds, you give the plant good soil and good water and good sunshine. And then it'll be strong. You don't have to use pesticides and different things like that. Similarly with children, if we give them lots of love and a good healthy environment, then they grow up strong and people can see they're strong. But when they're sickly, that's when predators come and bad things happen. What was the name of the Mataji in France? Kishori. Kishori Mataji was Srila Prabhupada's cook. And somehow when we went to New Mayapur a few years ago, she liked us very much. And she was coming to all of our classes and she insisted we come to her home. And she was telling us a story that as a grihastha devotee, she obeyed the instruction of the authorities and she sent her child to the Gurukula. And she didn't see her little boy for over a year. And then somehow they were reunited and the school teacher brought a little boy in and he sat down on the sofa next to his mother and the teacher went out and they were talking. And after a few minutes, the teacher came back in and saw Mother Kishori sitting on the sofa with the little boy. And he started yelling at the little boy, the teacher, "What are you doing sitting on a sofa alone with a woman?" He's like a 6-year-old boy. He's sitting on the sofa next to his mother. Mother Kishori became furious. "Be careful messing with a mother. Mothers are very dangerous." They were threatening her little boy at other times. He was telling her what it was like in the Gurukula. They were threatening him, putting in a washing machine and hurt him and things, and he was crying. And she became so angry. And she went to see Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, I think at that time, was in Vrindavan on the roof, and she was coming up the steps. And she told us that when she was coming up there, Satsarup Maharaj, Jagadish Prabhu, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, all these very senior devotees were speaking with Srila Prabhupada. And here's this little Mataji coming up the steps. And Prabhupada saw her face before she arrived. And he stopped. And he said, "Kishori, is everything okay?" And Kishori was so angry. She said, "Prabhupada, they're abusing my little boy. They're doing like this and this." And Prabhupada became furious. And he told the senior men, "What are you going to do about it?" And they said, "Prabhupada, she's just a Mataji. She doesn't know anything." And Prabhupada became even more angry. "No. These are our children. What are you going to do about it? You must do something about this." So really, this is our movement. We have to take care of these children. We have to take care of the ladies in our movement. We have to give them love. We have to give them dignity. We have to give dignity in this movement to everyone. Everyone should become empowered. It shouldn't be like you're a second-class citizen if you're married and you have to work a job. We should give respect to those grihastha men who are able to work and make money and maintain their family. It's a very respectable thing. It's not an easy thing to do. We should give respect to ladies who have to take care of children. Bhakti Rupa Prabhu, we stay with him in Bhubaneswar. His wife had twins, twin boys. For those of you who have children, you may know, being a mother, I've heard, is like being an all-night diner. Mm-hmm. You're laying there at night and the baby wakes up in the middle of the night and crawls over, and the poor mother has to wake up and start feeding the child. And then she can go back to sleep. But in this case, she would start to go back to sleep and then the other child would wake up. And by the time the second one finished and the first one would wake up again, and it was just, she wasn't sleeping. And for her, how could she chant her rounds? She was chanting on a clicker. And I don't know if she actually was able to finish her rounds for a few years. But she was so determined to be a devotee. To this day, she's chanting and being a devotee. What an amazing experience. We should respect that. She's raising those children in a very Krishna-conscious way. If we don't respect that, what kind of society do we have? If we don't give strong respect to such a personality, it's such a very, very important thing. We have a very sick idea sometimes of what is respect. There's an interesting story in this regard in the Mahabharata. I'd like to just tell you quickly. There was a Brahmin named Kaushika, and he was a brahmachari. He was doing all types of austerities and vratas. This story is there in both the Mahabharata and the Shringa Purana. And the Shringa Purana says that his father had performed all the different dasavida sangskaras for him. And then when the boy was young, the father passed away. And then the boy left his mother, who had no one to take care of her. And he set out as a brahmachari. And he was very proud. I'm a very strong brahmachari. He only had one kopan, one set of cloth. And he used to take bath in the river. And after he'd take bath in the river, he'd sit by the river and put out his cloth next to him and do his meditation. And one day when he did that, a bird came and picked up his cloth and started flying away with it. It's the only cloth he had. And that brahmachari, he glared at the bird and said, "Humph!" And the bird fell down dead. He said, "Yes, just see what a brahmachari I am." So after his cloth dried, he put the cloth on. He went into the city to give blessings to some poor rotten householder. And he went to the door, some householder, knocked on the door. The lady came to the door. He held out his cloth. He said, "Bo Mata Bhagavati Bhiksham Dehi. Oh, mother, please give me some charity." And she said, "Oh, yes, yes," right away. And she ran in to get something. Just at that time, her husband arrived home. And as soon as the wife saw her husband, she forgot all about the brahmachari. "Oh, Prabhu, are you okay? Please sit down. You have something cold to drink. Do you want some prasadam?" And she was taking care of her husband for 20 minutes or so. And then she remembered the brahmachari. Oh. And she started running back to the brahmachari. By that time, was very angry. And he started glaring at that woman, the same kind of glare that he gave to that bird. He said, "Poof." And then Mataji, she said, "Look, I'm just a household lady. Don't think I'm like that poor bird that you killed. If you want some food, take the food. Otherwise, don't mistreat me like that bird." The brahmachari became bewildered. He said, "Nobody else was there. I didn't tell anybody about what happened. How did you know about that?" And that woman, she said, "I have the power of Trikalagya. I can see past, present, and future." He said, "How did you become so powerful?" She said, "By service to my husband." She said, "For me, my husband is my deity. And by serving him in this way, I've gotten this power. And I know about you. I know that you left your mother. And she's been suffering because of that. You did a very bad thing." And then he became very, and she told him, she said, "You think you're so powerful. And because of your brahmacharya, you killed this bird." She said, "But actually, the real source of your strength is that your father performed all these different sangskaras for you when you were young. That's the source of your strength." And that by that time, this young brahmachari said, "Oh, I'm very sorry. Please forgive me. You're my guru. You please bless me. Please give me initiation." She said, "No, I'm not your guru." She told him, that you should go. There's a city of Mithila, and you'll find there in that city of Mithila there's a man named Dharmavyaga. And he lives there, and he knows all the subtle truths of religion. He's very truthful. He's very devoted to his parents. He's controlled his senses. You should go and seek him. He's your guru. So that Brahmachari said yes, and he went to the city of Mithila. And he asked everyone for this person named Dharmavyada. And they said, yeah, we know him. He's on the corner there. He runs a shop on the corner. Oh, he's a shopkeeper. Okay. So he went to the corner shop, and there was a butcher shop. So he went inside. I'm looking for someone named Dharmavyada. He has a shop near here. And the butcher looked up. He said, that's me. I'm Dharmavyada. The Brahmachari Kaushika, he said, well, and he was a little confused. And that Dharmavyada said, I know that Mataji sent you because you killed that bird. She told you to come here. And by this time, this Brahmachari Kaushika, he was very confused. He said, I know, I'm a butcher. Mm-hmm. He said, if you want, we can come to my house and have a talk. Okay. He was completely confused by that. The stories of Mahabharata and the Shingapurana. So then he went to his house. He said, give me just a few minutes. I'm going to take a bath and put some clean clothes on. And he came back and he offered some puja to his deities of Radha Krishna there and offered some prasadam. That Brahmachari, said, well, I don't. He said, it's okay. I'm a vegetarian. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I only take prasadam. And he said, but you're a butcher. He said, I know. It's very bad, isn't it? He said, that's my family occupation. What can I do? In this village, you have to do what your family occupation is. And I know, he said, I don't eat the animals. I don't kill them. But I have this horrible job that I have to do. But every day I come home and I offer things to the Lord and I give prasadam to everyone that I can. And I try to be truthful. And because I serve the guests, I'm also Trikalagya. Because I serve the guests so nicely and I follow the principles. And because I've always served my mother and father so nicely, because of that I know everything. Right? He said, so you should return home and you should serve your mother. And later on, after your mother passes away, then you can take sannyas. But until then, you should serve your mother. Otherwise, you won't have anything. So this story is there, both in the Nrisimha Purana and in Mahabharata, which it might kind of redefine our concept about respect. We need to be shook up a little bit sometimes. We have an institutional concept of things. But we need to see and respect other devotees for their devotion, not just for their dress or for how much money they give, whatever. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there's a conversation between Hanuman and Narad Muni. And Hanuman tells Narad Muni about the glories of Yudhisthira Maharaj. Brihad Vratadaram Asmam Stamscha Garhastam Dharminaha Samraja Vyaptan Matva Maparada Britobhava. He said, don't let your intelligence become confused by the offensive idea because you and I are staunch celibates and the Pandavas are just mere householders that we're somehow better than them just because of that. He said, you should understand that Yudhisthira is a very great personality. Mm-hmm. He says that Yudhisthira is very attached to his family members. But na priya deha sambandhan na chatur varga sadhanat padam shri krishna padabja prema sambandata priyaha. He said they're dear to him not because of bodily ties or even because they help him reach the four goals of material life, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, but because of their loving bond with the lotus feet of Krishna. Because they're devotees of Krishna. Sanatana Goswami writes in his commentary on this verse, he says, it's true that Yudhisthira was very attached to his brothers and wife, but that attachment was not material. It was based not on identification with material bodies, but it was based on the pure spiritual identities of him and his family as eternal servants of Krishna. Draupadi was the most excellent queen any emperor could have, and she was empowered with beauty and other transcendental qualities of Lord Vishnu's consort, Lakshmi. But Yudhisthira's affection for her was not due to being attracted by these qualities. He was completely immune to such attraction. Yudhisthira's brothers and wife also offered him valuable assistance in fulfilling his responsibilities for dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. These four material aims of life, however, were also powerless to distract him from his attachment to Krishna. His cherished connection with Bhim, his other brothers, and Draupadi, he only loved them because they had pure devotion for Krishna. Anything or anyone associated with Krishna is dear to a pure Vaishnava. So when Vaishnavas come together in either casual or lifetime relationships, they naturally develop love for one another. They relish great pleasure tasting together the rasas of Krishna consciousness. Their spiritual assets expand as each devotee's good qualities magnify those of his or her spiritual companions. In the family of the Pandavas, the wife and younger brothers especially benefited from following the head of Yudhisthira. So this is the purpose of our movement. Not to go and try to tell everybody that marriage is bad and relationships between men and women is bad. That's ridiculous. Nobody's going to listen to us if we go and speak like that. Rather, we should tell people, yes, you can have love, but you don't know what real love is yet. You have this thing which is just based on exploitation, which breeds frustration and violence, and it's very, very unhappy. But there's real love in Krishna consciousness. But how can we speak about that if we don't have that? If people come to our temples and they see that our relationships are dysfunctional, that the husbands and wives don't spend any time with each other, one devotee once told me, he said, I only shake my wife's hand once a month. His wife was pregnant 2 weeks later. I don't know how that happened, but it was a good handshake. But anyway, he was very proudly telling me like that. It's a kind of sickness. And people, when they're coming from the outside, they see that. Well, how are they going to be attracted? And if we treat our children like this, our children, they're going to correctly see, this is sick. I don't want this. We should have very deep, loving relationships, but they should be based on Krishna consciousness. So you're all senior devotees here, and I had some idea why we're here. It would have been nice to maybe have like a big grihastha meeting with devotees and discuss some of these things and to hear from different devotees. Perhaps if we come again in the future, I'd like to do that, maybe have a little bit of a seminar or something. Although I don't like talking about mundane family life, but I like to talk about Krishna conscious family life. And read from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita and the Bhagavatam and the Mahabharata and different literatures about family life. And give some devotees some inspiration how we can be Krishna conscious. Unfortunately, sometimes in some places in the world, the divorce rate amongst the devotees is higher than that of the non-devotees. We already have the same problems the non-devotees have, but then we add an extra problem to it, some frustration. We try to be something that we're not. We're trying to be a brahmachari when we're supposed to be a grihastha. We were requested in one large temple in Europe that the leaders actually told us, please preach to some of the devotees and tell them they should love their wives because they're just acting like brahmacharis. And I actually gave a class and told the devotees, we picked out a few people that I knew who had some problems, and I told them, your service is, Chaitanya Prabhu, every day you should tell your wife, I love you. And every day you should tell her, you're beautiful. But you have to say in such, you have to really mean it. If you don't mean it, it's very bad. And that's actually a service, because it's a man's service to protect the wife, just as it's a wife's service to help support her husband and encourage him. Men need that. And women need attention. They need affection. They need recognition. They need to be told, you're beautiful. And they are beautiful. Otherwise, you wouldn't have married them. You need to be told you're beautiful. You need to be told, I love you. We should tell our children, I love you. They need that. If you don't tell your wife that I love you and that you're beautiful, they need attention. If you don't tell them that, someone else might tell them that. And some bad thing may happen. And it has happened many times. So it's your duty to protect them. And this is how that we should protect them in Krishna consciousness. And the ladies, of course, know I'm not this body and I'm not beautiful and whatever, but still, ladies like to be beautiful and they like to be loved. We need that. And that's helpful in our Krishna consciousness. This is for a grihastha man. This is actually an important part of their service. Just as it's an important part of our service with our children to love them like anything and give them hugs and tell them, you're so wonderful, I love you, and spend time with them and listen to them. Just like we have to listen to our wives every day, even though it may be painful sometimes. Because ladies, they need that. That's how they solve problems, is just having someone listen to them. You all know that. So why don't we stop here? Maybe there's some comments or questions. What I'd really like to have is that we could have like a circle, and not tonight, it's too late, but we have discussions from different devotees and hear from different devotees how they manage to chant their rounds and work a job, how they manage to be Krishna conscious, how they manage at work when people are inviting them to go for a beer and a hamburger and this and that. It's a very important thing. If we don't discuss these things, how are new people going to become Krishna conscious? And some of our older devotees, I've seen sometimes we have older devotees who've been devotees for 20 or 30 years. They've been chanting Hare Krishna so long, but now they have a very bad self-image of themselves. They think, oh, I'm not really very Krishna conscious. I don't read the books so often. I don't go to the temple very often. I chant my rounds. I follow four principles. I tell my children about Krishna, but I'm not very Krishna conscious. I think you're very Krishna conscious. To be able to follow four principles in that situation and chant 16 rounds a day, that's not an easy thing. And that should be respected. You should have an understanding. You're actually a very important part of the community. And there are people who need you very badly. Younger devotees who need your realizations. Well, you need to share that with them. So these are just some thoughts I wanted to share with all of you tonight. And I hope you can try to implement this something with the congregation, with the devotees. Encourage them, love them, respect them. Everyone should become empowered. From the 5-year-old children to the old ladies, to the housewives, to the grihastha men working, to the sannyasis, the brahmacharis. Everybody should be empowered in our movement. Okay. Do you want to add anything, Chaitanya Prabhu?
I was just thinking how practical some of those things are. And in some ways it's also pretty much common sense, you know, telling you things like you love the person next to mother, as you said, why would you get married to somebody like that? And that focus of that love has to be, you know, directed. You have your physical attractions, you're saying your wife's going to be pretty. At the same time, you have your Krishna conscious attraction also. You can appreciate the other person for their devotion, for their ability to love the Lord in their ways, and therefore that's also attractive. And those combinations are good because, you know, you mentioned, you know, those terms of 50-50, and often I see that your partner often fills the gaps that you may have, and therefore it makes that combination that much more powerful, because in that way you get complete an offering to the Lord, so to speak, in some ways, you know. So it's very practical, and as you were saying, we've got to get to that platform, and I feel a lot of the younger devotees are misdirected in those ways, because they aren't given enough senior devotee support for them to be allowed to think that way and be open about it.
Wherever I go, I see all the devotees who've been devotees for 20, 30 years, and a lot of them think, I'm in Maya. And you go in their house, and there's pictures of Krishna everywhere, and Prabhupada, and everything, and they're chanting 16 rounds, but they say, I'm in Maya, Prabhu, because I'm not distributing books, I'm not going to the temple, because people are telling they're in Maya, but they're not in Maya, they're a great devotee. They've been chanting for so many years in this situation, and we need them. Our community needs them. We should love our wife. We should be attracted. There's a story of Govinda, who is the cousin of Ramanujacharya, and he was a very renounced person. And on the order of his mother, he finally got married to a very beautiful girl, and he was just never interested in her in a physical way. And finally, one day she complained to her mother-in-law, and her mother-in-law went to Govinda and she said, look, you married this girl, you should stay with her tonight, in bed with her, and you should give her a child. Yes, mother. And that night, Govinda spent the whole night with his wife reading the Bhagavatam. and he was in complete ecstasy. Did you see this part right here? This is amazing. Meanwhile, the next morning, the mother-in-law asked the daughter, "So how did it go?" She said, "You just read the Bhagavatam to me all night last night." It's a very beautiful young girl. So then the mother was very upset, and she went to Ramanuja, and she said, "Govinda's like this." And Ramanuja called for Govinda, and he said, "Govinda, what were you doing? Why, you know, you should give a child to your wife. Why are you're neglecting her like this? This is not right." He said, "You should find some place where nobody's present. It's a dark place where no one's there, and be alone with your wife, and you should conceive a child." And then Govinda told him, he said, "I've tried, but there's no place where I'm alone. The Lord's always present there. I can't be alone." And then Ramanuja looked at Govinda and he said, "I think you should take sannyas." So if we're not like that, then we should be a grihastha. That's a real sannyasi. Someone, he'll lay in bed with his wife on it, and he's just only interested in the Bhagavatam. And he can't see any place where Krishna's not present. That's a sannyasi. So we should just be what we are and be humble, simple persons. Krishna Balan, what do you think? You have any comments, anything?
Only my wife speak.
Why don't you come over here? You can put a pillow here on the steps or something, sit down.
I think a lot of what you said, if we heard many years back, it would have helped a lot. It still helps a lot today, because there's definitely...
It's never too late.
There's lots of misconceptions that still exist in terms of how we should interact in relationships, etc. And I think in one sense, the younger generation has a lot more free world in that sense. We were brought up in very rigid conditions in Krishna consciousness, if I may say so, where things were very rigid. You had to do this, wake up your Mangalarti program, do your rounds, all of those kind of, which are nice, which are important. But sometimes it also took out that affection in the relationships, and it became very mechanical in those relationships. It's just many years later that have taught us that we need to break down those barriers and actually be ourselves. It took a long time to come to that point. So I appreciate you speaking and saying what you're saying, because it's also... the point is that we have to come to those realizations on our own in some ways. It's not something that's encouraged in the society. Are you sure? I'm going to get banned from the society. But it's not encouraged in the open in some ways. So we have to come to those realizations on our own, yet somehow think in public forums, etc., etc., is it actually kosher or not? And the fact that you bring it out so openly and referencing it in so many different ways, there's a very good comfort feeling that we can have love and affection in relationships, and we should. It's an important aspect of development, etc., etc.
So we need you, Prabhuji. And the other devotees here, they need you. They love you. And they love your wife. They love your children. We all need each other. And when there's a marriage ceremony, I often tell the devotees, you're not just marrying each other. We were telling this to Mukundi the other day. But you're getting married to the community. And the community has high hopes for you. And if there's some, if you mistreat your wife or your children or something, then the whole community suffers by that. And we need to help each other. We need to show a good example how to love people. Rather than telling people there's no such thing as love, we should say, no, there is love. There's more love. You don't know what love is, man. We have real love over here. We should transform that love. Nandarani, do you have anything to say?
When you started class at 10 o'clock, I thought, oh my goodness.
Oh, it's 10 o'clock when we started. I didn't look at the clock.
And I'm so glad that you did it, because for me it was quite a revolution in class. So I'm still trying to digest it. I think it's much needed to discuss these things in the manner that you did. With regards to KB and I think I remember this quite clearly. When we first got married, we actually didn't know how to spend quality time together. So there was like, okay, what do we do? do we just sit and do the Bhagavatam?
Can I talk to him? Can I hold his hand? That's Maya.
The first time we actually went out or something like that, it's like, who's going to see us?
Can I tell you, not even how many years back, about 6-7 years back? Anyway, 6-7 years back, we were in a mall and we were thinking, devotees are going to see us now, ice cream at Murky Lane or something. How are we going to feel about it? And then we realized that, sure, all our devotees are doing this.
And you were not.
I think there's a bit of an interesting challenge, though. You're talking about the young devotees also. On the other hand, we're also seeing a bit of an extreme on the other side. I don't know if you can call it the extreme on the other side, where we, maybe in some ways unbridled in the way that we, the new devotees are, as you put it, free-spirited in some degree, but maybe, how can I put it, over the top maybe, in some ways, like an over-expressive, there's certain aspects of our lives that are meant to be between you and your spouse, right? I mean, there's certain boundaries and those kind of things that you meant to respect, that respect your relationship. Nowadays, with so many open forums, like a Facebook or whatever it may be, everything's just thrown out. And what I'm saying behind it is that the relationship isn't really treasured as much as well, in the sense that this
comment.
Is us, this is between the two of us. There's a sacred relationship between that as well. The intimacy levels or whatever it may be is all a sacred part of the whole combination. It's not meant to be held up in some kind of badge, or just see, I've got a devotee wife so-and-so, or whatever it may be, and you flaunt the whatever it may be out of it, you know. So somehow the other, even we need to give also guidance to balance that out in some ways, or that's what I would feel.
That's a great comment. Yeah, on one side we have the old fanaticism, and there's still some old school thought there, as everybody understands. And on the other side we have a lot of some people today. I remember seeing some articles why men and women should just hug each other.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't feel comfortable with hugging ladies or something. Been some people are doing like that or other things in a sentimental kind of way. We need to understand what is this culture. And at the same time, I'll say this really strongly, our culture is not the same as that Vedic culture. And it doesn't have to be. That's a really strong thing to say, but it's a fact. Prabhupada never insisted on that. In Vedic culture, we don't hear about people eating ice cream. We don't hear about people wearing trousers or working jobs or doing whatever. We come from a different culture. There's different marriage ceremonies in India, in different places. And we have different marriage ceremonies in the West. We have different cultural values here. There are certain things which are eternal, and there are certain things which are very, very helpful, like giving respect to women as mothers. But if you're working a job, if your wife is working a job, and you expect her to behave like the ideal Vedic wife, I think it's a little silly and ridiculous, because she's out there working in the work world, and she's not going to be like that, and you're not probably the ideal Vedic man. But we can take some ideals from that, some ideas from that Vedic system, and apply them accordingly. But the most important thing is in our bhajan, smartavya satatam vishnur, vishmartavina jatajit, sarve vidina sedha shur eta yoyeva kinkura. This verse from Padma Purana is quoted by Jiva Goswami Bhakti Sandarbha. He says that the essence of all rules and regulations is that we should remember Krishna and never forget him. So we should see what's good for my bhajan. And we should always, that's the main principle. And the ladies may wear jeans, the ladies may work a job, and may do whatever. They may not be Vedic, whatever Vedic is. That's very confusing to understand. The main, our system is we want to be Krishna conscious. And we want to love and respect everyone. So, Devi, what do you think? Both of you.
I think just like everyone else expressing the sentiment of love. expressive and how we should as couples do this. I think growing up in Krishna consciousness as well, things were very strict. I still remember this when I was young, that when you get married, you sleep in separate bedrooms. And it was always something that I said, when I get married, that's what I'm going to do, because it's Srila Prabhupada wanted us to do that, and it was the way it should be. And then when you grow up and you go through all of this and you see how, like Chaitanya was saying, how the youth are so extreme at what they do, and but on the one hand they're so expressive in what they do, I think it's you think differently, and you have to like you said, assess the situation for yourself, and you have to see that things are practical for what it should be without breaking principles. So I think it's really wonderful that you're speaking like this, and that Krishna Balaram said, if we knew what we knew now, then things would have been a lot more different. I think a lot of people would still be in marriages today, or would be divorced, or I think things would have been a lot different. But I think with ISKCON still being so new and so young, we all keep on saying that, but there isn't like another, no one's going that extra mile and saying, yes, it's young, but what are we doing different about it? So it's really nice that you gave this, because you're speaking in this way.
What we need is to think about ways to implement this for ourselves.
Yeah.
I mean, it begins just by thinking about it. And becoming together and talking about it in a frank way. And as Chaitanya Prabhu was saying, we should be careful of either extreme, being too fanatical or being too loose. We don't want to mention names, but there's one country we go to, and nobody's married there. And a lot of the devotees have been devotees for 20 or 30 years, and they're living together. And every year we go, they're living with a different person. Not every year, but every few years or so, they just change their partner. And that's just the way they do it in that country. And I'm disturbed by that. I don't like that. I don't think it's a very... How can you have a good, strong community in that way? What kind of values will the children have? Because really, community means raising children. And children need good examples, not just of their parents. There's so many, because actually the parents, the kids, if you guys haven't figured it out, after a while your kids won't listen to their parents anymore at all. They don't care for their parents, but they look at other people, other adults, and they'll listen to them. That's a good point you're making. You want to say something?
Well, actually, I feel like everybody said it was a very good interesting thing which was taken up today. I think what a grihastha ashram should actually make a man and woman both softer and sensitive, and it should act to each other, towards each other, and actually should help each other towards the devotion, towards your cravings for spirituality, your upliftment, what you're trying to achieve other than your material goals. It should not be like a barrier for you to be in a relationship. It should not like suffocate you at some point of time. Or you should not feel like everybody is doing, so I have to be in the grihastha ashram, or I'm forced to be in a wedlock or a marriage because family wants, or someone else is doing, or that. It should be natural for you. It should make you feel healthier and happier, and it should help you as an individual to grow. It should be like enriching your soul. In a true sense, a spiritual companion, not only in a physical way, to enhance your... I'm lost now.
I think I've got your thought. Bhaktivinoda speaks like that too. He says that actually the best ashram in Kali Yuga is grihastha ashram. You can do more. I don't want to say names, but there's been a few guru sannyasis in our movement who told Krishna Kundanai, you can do more than we can. And, of course, they're being very humble and they're very exalted, and who are we? But in one sense, I can appreciate that, because if you're a new person and you're going to tell somebody, here's this guy with a stick and his orange cloth and he's celibate and he never looks at women. Okay. And for a lot of people, that's kind of weird. And that's a really hard person to approach. But if you tell someone, here's my beautiful wife and she's so nice and let's talk together, it's much, much more comfortable. We can do that. Grihastha ashram is something we have to take care of our ashram. Just like if we have a brahmachari ashram in the temple and there's a hole in the roof and the water's coming in, you have a responsibility to go and fix the roof because it's going to disturb their bhajan. So in a grihastha ashram, your job is part of your ashram. Taking care of your children, making sure they have education, sending them to school, that's part of your ashram. And if there's a hole in the roof, there's a problem there, you have to fix it. Otherwise, your ashram will be disturbed. You have a certain service that you're doing. But the point I like very much you're saying, we need to realize that this is a spiritual ashram. And I should marry for that reason. And if we marry because I want to make spiritual advancement, because this person will help me in my spiritual advancement, that's wonderful. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta goes on to speak more about that. In that article we were reading from, he says that the reason why the guru doesn't generally encourage his disciples to get married is because he sees that they're not qualified, because they don't really want to be Krishna conscious. They just want to get married to someone because, wow, she's a hot babe, this guy's a hunk, and they for material reasons. And they're not going to make spiritual advancement because of that. And then it gives a bad name to the grihastha ashram. It's an ashram, a place where we're practicing spiritual life. And we have a responsibility, those of us, all of us in the grihastha ashram, to care about this ashram. Because other people, they're going to watch you. Your children are going to watch you. And they're going to see, how are you doing? And if you're not happy, Bhaktivedanta Purna Maharaj made this wonderful comment once, that he said that some grihasthas came to him once and they said, I can't figure it out. We raised our kids perfectly. I shaved their heads twice a week. The little boys, I was putting saffron cloth on them. I brought them to every Mangal Aarti every day and every Guru Puja and every Bhagavatam class. But when they got 14, 15 years old, they didn't want to be a devotee anymore. I don't understand. And Bhaktivedanta Purna Maharaj said, these children are not stupid. You may be going to the morning program every day, you may be doing everything, but your children are not just looking at that. They look and see, are my parents happy? Do they really like it? And if they see you're not really happy and you're not doing it because you like it, then they're not stupid. They're not going to be interested in doing it. We have another friend, a Russian couple who live in Jagannath Puri. They have a beautiful little girl. And they're nice devotees. They do puja to their Gorni Taititis every day and chant their japa and things. And they never invite their little girl, much less telling her to do it. They never force her. And I'm not saying this is the way to do it. There's different ways to raise children. But their particular strategy is they never, ever instruct her to do bhajan. And for her, it's such a special thing. She begs them, please, can I put on tilak? I want to put on tilak. It's such a... And when Krishna Kuna and I come to Puri, she's crying, I want to go with them. I want to be in the kirtan. I want... Because they don't push them. It's an adult thing. But when we try to force them, it's not good. Can I say something, Paul?
I can't speak much about...
You have had some realization about all this.
It's very good points that you've brought up. I'm still single. I'm 48 years old. And I'm never married. And I don't know, I just feel happy in the ashram that I am.
The bachelor ashram.
It's very good points that you've brought about. And as Mataji was saying, that, and even Krishna Balaram said that, had they known on these points, earlier on, it would have really made a big difference. And maybe, you'll be shocked at the amount of divorces that go on at the moment, even in the temple, in ISKCON. I'm shocked, to see it. And that's why maybe I'm scared to take that step.
But it's not also, it's not just...
Really?
Now we know why you didn't get married.
Yeah.
But that's a good reason. It's not just grihastha ashram, we're a community. And we should love devotees. We should love everyone should love the children. Everyone should protect the children. Everyone should help the older ladies. The ladies should help the ladies. The men should help protect the ladies, especially if a lady has children, she has babies. If something is very, very difficult, they get very depressed sometimes. They what they call post-traumatic What is it?
Postnatal
depression. It's a very real thing. It's, especially for devotee ladies. All of a sudden, their whole identity is you're told you have to go to Mangala Arati every day and chant your rounds, and if you can't do that, you're in Maya. And some ladies, they can't chant their rounds. It's just a fact. It's too much, especially if you have twins or something. It's just too hard to chant your rounds. You can't go to the program, and you think, I'm not a devotee. We need to help them. Ladies should go and you know, can I help you with your child? Do you need someone to do some shopping? Do you need to get something from you for you? Or we need that as a community. It's important. Prema Sindhu Prabhu.
Well, I was pretty fortunate.
He's very fortunate, isn't he, Mataji?
That's true. When I got married, I was just reflecting on what Sudevi mentioned. So I asked my guru Mahārāj, that was like a big thing at that time. So when I asked him, and he said, no, definitely not. You know.
Definitely should not sleep in a separate room.
Yeah. I mean, I was shocked. You know, you're but Mahārāj was very, he's very progressive in his thinking. And that's all he said, and he let me do the thinking. And so I thought about it, I said, you know, imagine my children growing up, seeing us being separate. What relationship are we forming? You know, this is, like as you mentioned, the parents are, you know, in different rooms, so they don't have a relationship. And where would they take those kids? What future would they have?
Yeah.
You know, so like that, we remained like this. And, you know, we carried on with our Krishna consciousness like that, with many ups and downs, you know. We all have different personalities, you know, and for us now, we also don't tend to force our kids. They are growing up, and they have their own identity.
You can't anymore.
And, you know, we have programs, we go for programs, we ask, and if they don't attend, we've tried, but we carry on, we do it. And we do it together, my wife and I do things together. You know, like as I mentioned earlier, you know, we have two vehicles, but we use one vehicle. So in the morning, we would take the one child who goes to school, but then we have a relationship, me and my wife. So we'll talk about whatever happens, what we're going to do in the week. So in the afternoon, her work problems, she tells me, and I just keep quiet, diligently, and that's good. And that helps a lot because she's a working class lady. And she does a certain job, I do a certain job. And we complement each other like that. And we spend a lot of time together. So even if I'm not a perfect person, like my wife is not a perfect person, but in the eyes of our children, they can see that we have some relationship already. You know, even if we don't make them Krishna consciousness or whatever, but they see that. No matter what, they see us argue, they see us do so many things, but they also see us together most of the time. You know, and that's important. How we shopping we do together. Whatever we do together. And, you know, sometimes we feel guilty. We don't go to temple that often. Or we don't go to so many programs that often. But a lot of things happen at home.
Yeah.
A lot of things happen.
You need to share that with others, too.
Yeah, that's my realization.
Sometimes I've heard it said by some psychologists that divorce is more violent to the child than abortion. That's a really heavy thing. Say, because of the abortion, the child's killed just one time, but if there's a divorce, if the parents don't get along, then the children suffer with that their whole life, and it's very, very hard. They have so many problems, and the community has problems. It's not just, a marriage is not just a thing between the husband and wife, but it's the whole community.
So, we talk about the community. It means something that's close, right? Meant to be close. We find, like, you know, living in the city, we might have a devotee living down the road and we don't see the devotee for a program or, you know, if we meet in the temple. So how do we, you know, bring that community sense?
I have two excellent books I would love to give anybody who's interested in developing communities. They're written by this lady named Diana Leaf Christian. She's one of the world's foremost authorities. She's not a devotee, but my God, they're great books about community. She studied why communities fail and how communities are successful. It's a big subject. I'll just answer briefly with an example. We visit, there's a community we go and stay with quite often in Kiev, Ukraine. And how many grihastha couples are there, Krishna Kran, you remember?
About 30.
Yeah. They're a group of devotees who, when you make a community, it's not like it's open for anybody. Because it's like being married to 30 or 40 people. It's like having 30 or 40 parents for your children. You want to be very careful. Someone's not a child molester. Someone's not going to abuse my children or something. So they had meetings together, and they worked out who our friends are, who we want to live together. And they all bought homes near each other. And as one of them said in a recent seminar they gave, we don't live near each other, we live together. And every day they chant japa together. Every day they're 1 hour of kirtan together. Every day pretty much they have prasadam at least once together. And they've done studies with non-devotees, with Christian groups and different groups. The more that you eat together, the closer your community is. We can help each other. People can help buy groceries for someone, watch their children. So many things we can help each other with. It's very, very, I personally think this is the future for our movement, to start cultivating communities where devotees live very close to each other, and not just close, but they live with each other. It's something we really need to think about. We depend on the temples so much. And this doesn't mean that the temples are less or bad or not relevant. The temples are always going to be there, and they're always needed for preaching, training devotees, for Sunday programs, for deity worship and festivals. And we need a community, though. The community will help the temples, as you know, Chaitanya Prabhu, I can see. The community will help the temples, but the temples also need to help the communities. We need especially devotee jobs, like they have in Mumbai. There's a whole group of Radhanath Maharaj disciples who purchased a hospital together. You must know that the Bhaktivedanta Hospital, and they're working together. And the atmosphere there is so nice. It's a very big subject. If anybody wants, he could write me an email. I'll send you these two books in PDF format. Very interesting books. She's very serious. She studied about it from an economic point of view, from a land point of view, from so many points of view, and also in the city, in the country, in versions where you're living in the suburbs, versions where you buy a big apartment building together, so many different versions, a lot of different ways.
The reason why I speak that, you know, I've been observing for a long time, that, you know, you want to foster relationships with other devotees. So when you go to temple, for example, it's when you walk in the temple grounds, it's Haribol, how are you? You go class, so you don't speak much. Then you have prasad, and you don't speak that much, and you leave, you go home.
It's a little stiff and formal.
Yeah.
Let's just be really honest.
Yes. And in Johannesburg, if you look at the dynamics, devotees are sparse, they're everywhere. You know, so maybe we're going to look at the future of maybe forming, as you say, communities.
And we need that.
That can help us, and we'll help the temple.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good for our children. Prabhuji, do you want to say something?
Yeah, I like the example of that bird. Bird example. I think from my perspective, it's very important to. I looked it from the devotion point of view for one's work, and one can engross into the work and get an insight to the level where one has that spiritual insight in terms of judging a thing, whether what is right at that time. So that woman actually had devoted so much in life towards the husband that she has achieved much better than that sannyasi. And then sannyasi, I'm taking a different perspective. Now sannyasi might have requested for that lady to be, like he wanted to be the disciple. Maybe he wanted to test. Maybe sannyasi was much more higher in terms of that lady, in terms of knowing, but he wanted to, from that perspective, to test that lady in terms of what should be the right approach for her being to be in the grihastha ashram and to follow things. Either she should have left that time, her work, and just attended to the sannyasi, and maybe he wanted to test that. So that was a very different example in terms of judging it from different perspectives. And it's like giving a different facets, being in grihastha ashram, how one has to deal at different levels. appropriately.
Except Mahabharata is primarily a Dharma Shastra, and there are many stories in the Mahabharata which are very provocative, like this story, which sounds outrageous. Oh my God, how, you know, this, the whole story is very, this, the guy's a butcher and he's a sadhu, how can that be? Because the Mahabharata is always trying to show us what's real Dharma, and what's real Dharma doesn't always look like real Dharma. Our perspective, though, we're not really interested in that type of Dharma. We're interested in bhakti. And what to speak of the kind of Dharma being discussed in the Mahabharata, in Krishna bhakti, things are very crooked sometimes. And we may give more respect to a child who has bhakti or to a mataji who has bhakti than we do to a sannyasi or whatever. There's a vanashram consideration, and we respect the sannyasis and gurus and leaders in our society and elderly people. That has to be there. That's culture. But mostly we should respect bhakti. And that bhakti may come in many different crooked ways, as you're saying. It's an interesting thing. Bindiya, do you want to say anything? No, you're too shy. It's okay. Mother, do you want to say anything? You come sit up here. She'll support you. Mother,
I think that's something we started off in the beginning, and it was a challenge. But I think my children and the Christian consciousness is a very, very big challenge right now.
Mm-hmm.
And for the future.
Yeah. It requires a community for them.
Yeah.
I've seen this with the kids. If we're trying, it's just so hard. The outside influences are so hard.
Yes.
And maybe we're not so perfect as we'd like to be as parents.
Yes.
So we need a strong community. It's so very, very important. And then the children need friends. They need peers, other girlfriends, and maybe some boys who are Krishna conscious and come together, and they're cool. And they dress the way they like to dress. What is the group called? What's that saying they have in Punjabi Bhag amongst the lady group? The yeah. We are what we are, or something like that. It's a cute saying. Anyway, can you say something about that group, though, Krishna? Can you dealt more with them? They have a youth forum for girls there, and just how they dress and how they do. And
yeah, they don't push the externals. They do push Krishna Pata, they do push chanting, and they don't go on book distribution together. Like, they set up a table, and girls go together, they don't go on their own. They do things together like that. They do preaching programs at colleges and universities together like that. and it's just really very kind of modern there. And they just have a good time, and they love it. And there are a few senior matajis who are taking care of them, one mataji in particular. She's in her 50s, and she's like a mother to all of them.
And they love her.
And they love her, yes. And she's taking care of them in a big way, you know, from prasad on to getting them married. It's like anything in between. And it's just a bunch of sisters, practically, the way they are operating. It's really very nice to see.
It would be a nice thing if we could do something like this for these kids.
It's so necessary for them. They have some mood together, those girls.
The other consideration is, do we want to give up what we have for living communities?
We don't. Everybody has certain things they're attached to. If you speak about communities, a lot of people think, well, it means moving to the countryside and not having electricity and cooking over cow dung fire. and forget it. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. But there's communities who live together in the city. We visited, there's one community in Holland. We were just chatting with them on Skype yesterday. And they do so many things together. There's one, they have a group of devotees who have a plot of land the government's given them to garden, and they grow their own food. There's one devotee who goes and buys grains, organic grains, outside the city, and he grinds it himself, and he makes bread, and he sells it to the devotees. He's not doing a big business. He just wants to please the devotees. He sells prasad and bread. There's so many things we can do if we come together. I mean, wouldn't it be nice to have organic bread from fresh grains? Somebody can do that, and you'd be happy to pay for that. And maybe somebody can make a business like that with the devotees. There's things we can do. It all begins if we just come together and discuss these kind of things. But I would strongly urge you to come together and do kirtan and have some Krishna katha and then discuss with Krishna consciousness as the basis, not just make it into some mundane thing. And Krishna gets lost. That happens sometimes too. And that's very unfortunate. We don't want that. Mukunda. We save the best for last.
Well, I'm hearing everybody, and I think, you know, everyone's quite fortunate in that sense. Because I kind of fall on the negative side of your positive reaction. I've been divorced. And there's a serious leg missing in our society. And that's a leg of assistance. Because before I got divorced, I didn't have any assistance. I didn't know who to look up to. I didn't know who to speak to. I didn't know who to confide in. And when I got divorced, 3 years after that, I went through a depression, serious depression. Nobody was there to assist because we didn't have that structure. I came out of it on my own. I had help from a few friends in Krishna Bharam Guru. And some other devotees who spoke Shastra to me. At that point, you know, Shastra was just Shastra to me. And I needed someone to help me heal my heart. And there wasn't anyone, so I came out after 3 years from all of that. But yes, there's a serious latency in this society.
It's interesting, in our society, more and more devotees are realizing this all over the world. It's not just something that I'm thinking about. Devotees are speaking about this all over. And in different places, I won't say names, they're trying to deal with it in different ways. And I've seen broadly two approaches to it. One is a kind of an institutional approach, a counseling system, and we have counselors. Every grihastha has a grihastha counselor. And that's okay. That's a good principle. But I've seen it fails terribly when it's forced. When someone's forced to have a particular counselor, they don't, if it's natural and you love that person, that's very good. The other system, which I more lean towards, although both have their utility, the one I lean more toward is just a natural system where you come together and you have Krishna Katha together and you just open your hearts, then it happens automatically. You'll develop very deep relationships and you'll just be close friends. When you have some problem, maybe you'll go to Krishna Bala and Prabhu or this one or that, and you'll open up your heart to them without, you know, Krishna Bala and Prabhu being your official counselor or whatever like that. And that becomes a little strange sometimes when we force these kind of relationships on each other. But it's all based on Krishna Katha and Kirtan that we have in a very deep way, and we really meet together in a loving way. It's very powerful. And so good for the kids. So good for the kids. Your daughters need that. Your children need that. But they need to be with somebody who appreciates them and values them and can still respect them in spite of the way they're dressed. You know, that's Maya, the way you're dressing. You know. But we should love them. They're wonderful devotees. We don't want to lose them. We need them. They're our future. We're all getting old and gray-haired and useless. These children are our future. It's very, very important. So one thing I like to do with the children is just to get them together and ask them, what can we do better? It's a really powerful thing in the temple. Sometimes they have some great ideas. And then we should try to act on them or get them to help us to act on them.
Prabhu, I've seen, I go to Durban a lot, you know, and the community here in Johannesburg, it's much more closely knit, like mm-hmm. the devotee community compared to Durban. Durban, like, you don't even know the person that's sitting next to you in the temple.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even know the name of the devotee that's sitting next to you in the temple. Like here in Johannesburg, it's a smaller community, and we a bit more close to that.
You know, that let me interject 1 second. One reason for that might be because as a community they spent so much energy making a building and doing the book distribution thing, which was a huge endeavor. I can see it's a beautiful building. But then they didn't work so much on community building.
Yes.
And you've done that more here. You don't have as big a building, but you've worked more on on a community building. I'm sorry, go on.
Yeah, no,
it's a good,
that's
good
what
point.
I'm just trying to say. It didn't
it's sort of, done a lot of work over the years to bring that part together.
Here?
In Durban.
In Durban,
uh-huh. Yeah.
I thought it was a nice community there. Of course, we were just there a short time, so I can't really say. Krishna Kund, do you want to add anything else? Have we forgotten anything? You have such a good perspective. One thing that we found as a couple traveling is that just a lot of times, I feel really frustrated. I'll tell you 2 very quick stories. I know everybody's tired. We've been approached twice, once in India and once in Hungary, by ladies. The first time the lady, we had a master's degree in psychology. Second time the lady had a PhD in psychology. They were both brand new devotees, and they both almost were saying the exact same thing. Wow, this Krishna consciousness is great. Kirtan, the books, prasadam, the deities, Prabhupada, everything's wonderful, but how come there's nothing for women? And then I could see both times they were more qualified than the men to give talks. And they're very educated. And the PhD lady, she told us that when she asked for service, they said, oh yeah, sure, what kind of expertise do you have? They didn't know about her education. And she told them, well, I have a PhD in psychology. And then they kind of choked, you can teach our 5-year-old children. And that's what it's almost like an insult. It is an insult. It's offensive. And we shouldn't do that. Maybe sometimes our society is so patriarchal, it's so, as I said, it's so male-oriented. And it's very difficult to change. It's difficult for the women to change, practically impossible. And it's also difficult sometimes for the men to change. But sometimes then we can just have programs for the ladies and empower the ladies like that. And Krishna Kund, she gives wonderful talks in a number of places, and she's inspired. Well, anyway, you're just one example. We give Lakshmi Moni Machaji as an example, or Mother Irmala, so many who sometimes in this male-oriented society can't give class in front of the men. They made a rule in the Vrindavan temple that ladies are allowed to give class once a week or something. And Mother Lakshmi Moni, one of the most senior lady devotees in our movement, who is a saint, I love her. She has very deep realizations. Krishna Kund can tell you a lot about her. She came to give class. She uses about 100 devotees. When she came and sat down, there's maybe 3 devotees. All the brahmacharis just got up and walked out. That's a shame. That's really, really a shame. And it's a shame for the men, but it's also a shame for the ladies, and it's a shame for Mother Lakshmi Moni. She should be empowered. So maybe the men won't come because they have some problem. Well, that's their problem. But let's make some other program to empower her and to enable other new people to hear from her. Maybe we can't do it in the temple, but make it in someone's home or do some other thing. Let's empower some of these ladies and let's empower some of these children too. Some of our children are powerful speakers and powerful kirtan leaders.
You said quite often, you know, namahatas. Yes, for me, the namahata, we're going in the wrong direction with namahatas. For the senses, we just meet together, have prasad, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't see, a namahata for me is a forum or a platform where we can bring the future of Islam. You know, not necessarily, people might be shy giving classes in the temple, but he has a platform, as you say, you know, Mataji's, youngsters. This is a platform for them to speak, for one to lead kirtan, for one to do arti. This is where you learn. And we don't practice that. It's still a hierarchy, it's still there.
A lot
That's
of times.
I stay in the background, you know, many, many times. Because if I talk, they get affected.
I 100% agree with you.
Just sit back and I just try and encourage. Because there's also new devotees sometimes running the namahatas. You don't want to fry anybody out.
Yeah.
You know, you want to encourage, but you don't want to fry. But that's the wrong approach. Definitely it's the wrong approach.
For me, as a traveling so-called preacher, I'm assistant to the preachers, but for me, the best thing is to go to someone's home. That's the sweetest. The worst thing is to go to someone's home and it's a mechanical template based Namhat program, where everything, okay, now we're going to have 5 minutes of this, and for 10 minutes we're all going to chant japa together, and everything is so mechanical, and it just defeats the whole purpose. Let's be people. A lot of people are not going to join like that. They see everything so mechanical. So I, my humble request to all of you, why don't you get together more amongst yourselves? I can see you have a lot of loving relationships. Come together and have some discussions like these, practical things, and Krishna Katha, and Kirtan. That should always be, that's the basis of everything. But we should also have practical dealings. Recently in Tashkent, in Uzbekistan, the temple authorities asked me to speak to the temple management board about devotee care. And they were a little shocked at what I told them, because they're used to hearing all these slokas from me and Bhagavatam thing. And I started speaking to them about communities and how you should help devotees to make businesses and live together and things we're speaking about tonight. They're a little shocked. But one of the examples that I gave is from Bhakti Ratnakar and Narahari Chakravarti in that wonderful book, which is written 500 years ago. If you're not familiar, Bhaktisiddhanta printed that book. He speaks about Sanatana Goswami and how Sanatana Goswami used to travel throughout Vrindavan, and he loved all the Brijbasis, and they loved him. He would stay at a different place every night, and everywhere he would go to them and say, "Hey, how are you doing? How's the wife? How are you feeling better? You were sick last time I saw you. How's the crops? Are the cows doing okay?" And he would ask them about all these seemingly mundane things. And to me, this is a good example. This is a loving devotee. Prabhupada would do like that. I'm sure your Guru Maharaj does like that. All of our really empowered devotees in our movement do like that. And they speak to devotees about Krishna. Both things have to be there. We have to be persons. Just as we have to, a husband has to tell his wife, "I love you, you're beautiful." When we see each other, we have to ask, "How are you doing? You know, you still have the problem with your kidneys or whatever. How's your job going?" That's love. And we need that. Otherwise, how can we go on with our business, with our work, with our families? All right. Anybody else? It's really late. I think we should stop. The running's tired. Srila Prabhupada ki. Vamsha kalpataruvischa kripa sindhu devachha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnavevyo namo namo.